measurements so far, stuff like that. Then I'll talk about general gauge or minimal gauge mediation, basically, and just kind of talk about the constraints it places on the Higgs boson and just in general what it's like. Then I'll talk about this more generic gauge mediation and what that means and how it changes gauge mediation. And then I'll talk about the lightest Higgs boson mass in that context and how the mass, spectrum has changed a little bit. Okay, so just talking about the standard model. So the two most recent measurements of fundamental particles were in 1995, the stop was discovered. That completed the quark families. And then the tau neutrino was measured in 2005. And so it's actually been nearly 11 years since a fundamental particle has been measured. And so there hasn't been anything seen at the Tevatron. The LHC so far hasn't seen anything. And in those years, they've also continued through B factories and other methods to put constraints on the CCKM, for example, from flavor physics. And in fact, flavor physics says that the cutoff scale for this new type of flavor physics is about 100 or 1,000 TeV. So the standard model has been rigorously tested, and it becomes more and more, seems more and more like that the standard model is a very good model. This is a very high scale of cutoff scale, which this could just be through a loop or something, and that allows that scale to be lower. But still, that's quite a significant cutoff scale. However, the standard model, if you look at the standard model, it can accommodate cosmology like dark matter and other things. They can be accommodated. Neutrino masses are also possible. And the LHC is pushing up the scale of new physics to quite a high scale. So the question, I kind of started asking myself towards the end of the summer was, man, is it time to give up on supersymmetry? Or really, a lot of these new physics have become more and more difficult to reconcile with the LHC. And including supersymmetry. But we know that nature tells us there is more out there, right? So we know there's something dark matter we don't really understand. Right-handed neutrinos have mass. Now, a simple Dirac neutrino actually will do. You can actually just put a really tiny Yukawa coupling or so forth. But there is at least this right-handed neutrino. And I also argue that nature suggests that there are more complicated gauge structures. And that's, in essence, meaning gauge coupling unification. Now, it doesn't work exactly within the standard model. Additional matter is needed. But beforehand, it didn't have to be that these coupling values were such that you get this unification. If these started out very different values, you would not end up with this nice apparent gauge coupling unification. What is the Higgs bosons like in the context of gauge coupling unification? So we see that we see the hints of gauge coupling unification. And if we take this seriously, then there are some difficulties, right? One of those is you have this huge, at least this much tuning to the Higgs, right, to go to the gut scale. You also need additional matter content to somehow account for this unification. And one example is like scalars, if you're just talking about within the context of the standard model. And if you take scalars, actually, you have to have 6 scalars added to this. If you had 6 scalars, it just exacerbates the hierarchy problem. So you can't have gauge coupling unification exact in the context of the standard model. However, it's not as pleasing. So what I started thinking is I want to think about a criterion for an interesting gauge coupling unification, interesting unification model. So of course you have to have gauge coupling unification. I mean, that's obvious, right? But I also want unification discernible at the LHC. So if unification isn't really discernible at the LHC, I say it becomes less interesting. It's not to say that you can't have that, but I find that a much less interesting model because who knows when we will be able to really discern this unification. And the other thing is I also like to justify this additional matter, right? So as I said, you have to add some type of additional matter. So you don't want to just ad hoc add some like you did with 6 scalars to the standard model. So this is what I say is one of the good leftover motivations for supersymmetry. The matter content is justified, right? Supersymmetry says that this additional matter should be there. This necessary matter is visible at the LHC. However, there is some range at which you still get unification, but they're out of the range of the LHC. But I mean, again, those would fall into the uninteresting category. And you also get a little bit of a bonus here that the Higgs is somewhat shielded. So the fine-tuning arguments are maybe not the main motivation under this type of thinking for supersymmetry, but you know, it's still nice that you don't have this huge, huge tuning. So this slide came about because before the summer, I remember thinking, man, this is the greatest time. We're in the LHC. We're going to see so much data and so much new interesting things. And then towards the end of the summer, I was starting to think, man, this is the worst of times. The LHC's ruled out everything. Everything looks terrible. What?
It didn't work out well for people in that book, right?
So this is just kind of the M-Sugar plot of M0s M1 halves, and just kind of showed that, you know, in some generic type mass or space, you are getting to where you need fairly heavy squirks and galenos. I don't know if you can read that very well, but basically, actually, it doesn't look like the lines for the squirks are showing up. But anyway, it's roughly that you need a TeV, squirks and galenos for generic masses. So then the question is, what is the true killer of the MSSM? And I would say the true killer is a heavy Higgs mass. So if you want to think about the MSSM without additional matter content, the Higgs boson mass, if it's pushed up to, you know, 200 GeV, the MSSM really can't accommodate that. So you can push it up a little bit. And so this is just some, you know, quick rundown of some ways you can push up the mass of the Higgs boson, for example. You can have a 5M5 bar. Let's say, and I want to keep gauge coupling unification, so I'm thinking in the context of preserving gauge coupling unification. So I could add a 5M5 bar, which still preserves gauge coupling unification. However, if you just add a 5M5 bar, it only couples to H down. And H down doesn't really help your Higgs mass. You can add a singlet to possibly help enhance this. But again, you just keep having to keep add more and more matter content. It gets more complicated. You can add a 10 and 10 bar, and this does couple to H up and does enhance the lattice Higgs mass. And you add a 10 and 10 bar, and this is so that you have a supersymmetric mass, and then you don't have to increase the Higgs to gamma-gamma and other things. But these contributions, again, are still only logarithmic. So, I mean, that's the whole point of supersymmetry. We solve the supersymmetry, all radiative corrections should be proportional to these logarithms. And so the Higgs mass only goes up by a logarithm. So here's an example. If you take Sugra and add a 10 and 10 bar, it gives a maximum mass of about 140 GeV. And this is a paper by Asano, Moroi, and Yanagita. So, I mean, that doesn't help you a lot. And even if you want to consider like split supersymmetry, again, you still get a similar, you know, Higgs mass, 145 GeV, if you put your masses at the gut scale. So again, it's hard to get a really heavy Higgs mass in supersymmetry.
So is it important
that you mentioned that it's Sugra? Okay, the reason I mentioned Sugra here is because Sugra tends to have generically large A terms. You can have generically large A terms. So there's actually, if you do this in gauge mediation, you don't get quite as significant of an enhancement because you don't have A terms or something.
Yeah,
so I'm thinking, yeah, exactly, that's right. I'm thinking of gradient mediation. So now I'm going to talk about Higgs surges. So this is pre-LHC. So pre-LHC, there was quite a significant range of parameter space left over. I mean, I just put 600 for, you know, approximately 600. And 114 GeV is the left bound. This is kind of a theoretical bound. And however, pre-LHC, you would think SUSY wasn't that significant, that one less than 135. And you still had a significant problem from LEP. And it was, and the SUSY Higgs mass constraint was only a very small amount of this very rather large parameter space for the Higgs boson. As you can see, the Tevatron. And the Tevatron did exclude a little bit here, right around the W resonance. But again, really, most of the parameter space was left over before pre-LHC, or a lot of parameter space left over for the Higgs. Post-LHC, so this is the recent, this was just put out 2 weeks ago, I think. This is the combined analysis of ALICE and CMS for a luminosity between 1 and 2 femtorb arms, 2.3 femtorb arms. As you can see, they've ruled out a significant amount of parameter space at the 95% confidence level. So, you know, almost up to 500, and clear down to about 140 is where you have ruled out the standard model like Higgs boson. But as you see, there are some interesting peaks here. For example, this one around 140, which I'm going to stress a little bit more, and also this one, this is the one that I guess the rumor is out is probably is related to this point, which is right around 126, 125, well, 126, 127, but it's close enough. I'm assuming that's the point. But there's still other points, right? You see this other, this is actually above 2 sigma. This is clearly above 2 sigma. Actually, that one's also above 2 sigma. So, I mean, these are, you know, points you might start thinking, is that the standard model Higgs boson? Yeah, it's, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's a few GeV. Yeah, that's right, order. Yeah, so most of the noise, most of the width is still from system, the machine, errors in the machine. The width of this is not the width of the Higgs. So this kind of blows up this mass of the low mass range. And as you see, again, you can see more clearly that there is some white space there. However, this spot right here I'm going to talk about, it seems to have some inconsistencies between ALICE and CMS, actually. So this is driven a lot. The large width of this is driven by WW production off-shell. The reason it's so wide is because that usually is through decay to a neutrino or a lepton decay, so you have a missing neutrino, and so reconstructing the actual mass is somewhat difficult. CMS, so this is just CMS with 1.66 inverse femtorb arms. As you can see, they actually have a fairly significant excess here at 140. Which might make you think, well, maybe there's a 140, this looks, you know, more promising for a 140 GeV Higgs. The problem is, and this is a more complicated plot, this is the only one that ALICE has about the same thing, is if you look at this, it turns out that ALICE actually sees, this dotted line here is what they expected, and this right here below, this peak right below, I hope I'm pointing at the right place, is they see less than they expected. So there's somewhat of an inconsistency. However, when they did the combined analysis, which I don't think I show, there's less data from ALICE than CMS, and CMS's peak is fairly large. So actually, in the combined analysis, it still looks like there's something at 140. This is a plot that compares p-values for the standard model Higgs boson. And so this is what are the chance, you know, this basically tells you what is the chances that this fluctuation is due to random noise. And as you see, there is a point at 140 that's fairly significant around the 3 sigma level, so it's unlikely this is due to noise. However, it's clearly not a standard model like Higgs boson, because you can see this green dotted line, which goes way down here, corresponds to what the p-value should be if it was a standard model Higgs boson. Huh? So this is the masses are down here. So this is the 141.
Yeah, sorry, just a point. I mean, this is the local p-value, which means that it's really not something you can interpret as the probability of getting something like that.
It's not the probability of you this being a Higgs, right? It's just the probability this is not due to noise.
No, it's not. Well, I mean, because you're doing, right, they're looking at every different point, and so there's a corrected p-value. But I think they put some of the plots.
So you're saying this one isn't that?
A fluctuation, because you have to ask what's the probability of getting the biggest fluctuation of due to noise, mm-hmm. the biggest fluctuation in your sample being bigger than this 10 to the minus, being more significant than this 10 to the minus 3. That probability isn't 10 to the minus 3. The probability of getting a 10 to the minus 3 somewhere due to noise
is different.
Whatever it is, 10 to the minus, you know, maybe 1/30th or 1/10th or something like that. They have to make up the number. I don't know
enough
to
talk about it. I see. Yeah, you're right. So anyway, this is interesting because, I mean, yeah, it's not, I guess it's not quite what I say, but anyway, this shows some level of significance of what you think those data points are. So then the next question is, why do we care about gauge mediation? I do want to say one more thing on that last plot. Yeah, so in the comparison to this, this is actually this 125 point, which actually looks more similar to what they expect the standard model to look like, right? So, and this is that point that's been rumored about. So softly broken. So why do we consider gauge mediation? Is if you just consider generically softly broken MSSM or supersymmetry, MSSM, you have many, many parameters, 109, in fact. So that's an awful lot of parameters. And if you take those completely generic, you have large A terms and generic soft masses that lead to flavor violation. And this is just an example of one flavor violation. This is lepton flavor violation. If you have off-diagonal lepton masses, this branching relation can be quite large. And experimentally, this is quite strongly constrained, right? The decay of a muon to an electron, for example, has a branching fraction to an electron with a gamma. It has a branching fraction of 10 to the minus 12, approximately. So this is very, very tightly constrained, or has to be less than 10 to the minus 12. So phenomenology really strongly requires that these masses be diagonal. And in fact, some of them, you know, had to be degenerate if you're worried about the Skork sector and so forth. So what you need is you need a well-motivated model with no flavor violation. And a good example of that is minimal gauge mediation, because minimal gauge mediation also has no CP problem. And that is assuming that you can somehow solve the mu-b-mu problem without introducing CP violation. And there are models to do that. So I'm just ignoring that issue. If some of you want, we're worried about that. I'm talking about mu. Yes, I'm saying gauge, because basically you can in minimal gauge mediation you can rotate away one of the CP phases using the theta rotation, right? So if you just look at the gauge eno masses, which generally you would think would have some type of phase, you can actually rotate that. They all have the same phase if you in minimal gauge mediation because you have just one F term. And then you can actually rotate that away with your theta parameter. However, then you might worry that you have in your mu reintroduces the same problem. However, there are ways around that, actually.
All
it's
right,
not
but you're
going
to assume no CP violation.
I'm
going to
assume no.
Passes, so you don't need to worry about the thinking bar.
Yeah. So then we'll talk about conventional gauge mediation. So conventional gauge mediation, as I kind of argued in the beginning, granulification is a nice feature of supersymmetry, of low-scale supersymmetry, and it motivates supersymmetry nicely. So if you want to consider, gut consistent, you want to consider a gut model, you have to have gut consistent representations to be your messengers in your model. So the simplest possible representation is a 5 plus 5 bar, and I decompose them according to phi lepton, phi color, like this, for later convenience. And generally, in gauge mediation, you impose what is called messenger parity, and the point of that is that it sequesters the messengers from the visible sector. And the visible sector, meaning the MSSM, is what I'm meaning by that. And the reason for that is these have the same quantum numbers as the MSSM particles. At least this 5 bar does, right? So you might, unless you sequester it somehow, it should mix with the standard model. And this is actually what we're going to break and do something slightly different with. So the messenger sector then couples like this, where you have some spurion. This is a supersymmetric spurion, so it has an F-term vacuum expectation value and a scalar. And it couples to your messengers like this. And we'll go and discuss a little bit more about that. But right now, so without messenger parity, so let's assume that I remove from minimal gauge mediation messenger parity. It has two problems. One of those is I now can allow couplings like this, which because this part of the 5 bar is just like a Higgs boson, the 5 and 5 bar is just like a Higgs boson. So it should be able to couple with couplings like this. So this creates a flavor problem because now I have these generic couplings, which a priori shouldn't be related to the Yukawa couplings or diagonal, and so I have flavor problems. Now you might say, well, in general, in gauge mediation, these are generally 10 to the 5 GeV, 10 to the 6 GeV, which is right on that threshold of what you can have in KK bar mixing. So you might say, well, tree level stuff is fine, but these should also, through normalization group evolution, reintroduce issues as you run down from the mediation scale. And worse, you also have operators which contribute to proton decay, where these Higgses then give these operators. So it seems messenger parity is quite necessary in order to not cause other problems in gauge mediation. So now, just a really quick review of the mass generation gauge mediation. So this is the 8 diagrams that generate the scalar masses. This is from Martin, a paper by C. Martin. As you see, they're of order 2 loops, which is important because the gauge enol masses are generated at 1 loop from this diagram. And since they're of order mass, and this is mass squared, you square those, and they're very similar in size. So you don't have some huge split spectrum. They're similar in size. However, if you consider trilinears, trilinears arise at 2 loops. However, a trilinear is a mass dimension 1. So that means that if you like take, for example, take a ratio of AT over M fermion squared, you get a 2-loop suppression. And even worse than that, since all these particles only interact among one gauge field, and that's hypercharged, the only one that all of them are charged under. So if you want to create trilinears, it's also the smallest coupling you have there as well. So these are quite suppressed. So what is the Higgs boson in the context of minimal gauge mediation? So you have these A terms, which are 0. And your one loop mass for your Higgs looks basically like this. So as we showed, this ratio is basically 0. So you can just cross those terms out. And now you still have this logarithmic enhancement piece, which is basically because the mass of the stop is heavier than the top, and so you have some logarithmic enhancement there. It turns out this piece is a little bit larger than even this piece can be, so you still have the most important contribution. However, but you're stuck. You're in minimal gauge mediation, even if you take tangent beta pretty large, so that this sine squared beta is 1. You get a Higgs that's less than 120 GeV, even if you take M Gleno of 2.5 GeV. And so that means if you really want to see minimal gauge mediation at the LHC, you have to have a Higgs less than 120 GeV. So what we started thinking about is we want a more generic gauge mediation. So and really what that means is we want to think about, is it possible to generate large A terms in the context of gauge mediation? So the problem, and the thing is, you have to get rid of messenger parity. So, because messenger parity forbids your messengers from directly interacting with the MSSM field. So, what it means, you have to go via a gauge field. So, you have to go through a gauge field to the messengers in order for you to get gauge mediation. So you're stuck with 2 loops. You have 1 loop for the gauge fields and 1 loop for your messenger fields, and you're stuck with this 2-loop contribution. So, you really have to remove this complete forbidding of the messengers communicating with the standard MSSM fields. So kind of a wish list is messenger. So what we allow in this kind of wish list, messenger Higgs mixing allows an A term. So that's the point. This we allow mixing of the standard model fields. The mixing we allow is with the Higgs boson. And the nice thing about this feature is it doesn't generate flavor. So there's no flavor violation, no proton K generated via this mechanism. And basically, it's from what's called the SUSY zero mechanism. And what it is we have some U1. This is an additional U1. It's not hypercharged. But it's some U1. We're not really considering where it come from, how it was broken. We're just assuming it's broken by some spurion. So I mean, kind of the same thing you do with the Z in supersymmetry. You just say, effectively, supersymmetry is broken with a Z. And we're just saying this is a spurion. But it originally had some charges from this U1, which then forbid what are the effective operators left at the low scale. So, and you charge this positive, and only the Higgs bosons are negatively charged. And the standard model fields are positive, right-hand neutrino is 0, messengers, everything else 0. You do that, you get one additional interaction. It's this right here. And you actually can't get any other interactions because of homomorphy of the superpotential. Actually, that's not true. You get one more. There's one more with H down. But it turns out H down is important for the Higgs mass, so I'm not going to worry about it right now. But anyway, this is the new interaction you get, which we parameterize by this G prime. And actually, the other reason to not consider H down is you tend to have tachyonic spottom masses in this setup. So there are some, you can still make it work for some reason in parameter space, but you do have a tachyonic spottom mass, which I'll explain.
Sorry, and the second mass is the fraction of dimension 5.
Yeah, so we are assuming that somehow this is of order 1.
Okay.
So maybe strong dynamics or something, but yeah, you're right. So that technically should be suppressed by some mass scale or whatever, but we are assuming order 1 for this.
And why don't you write down the interaction about the Z?
Without the Z?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we will later. Yeah, okay. We will later. We actually will consider all those other, because they're basically new mu term-like things, right? That's what you're saying. Yeah, we consider those. So I guess the important thing, I say the new important interactions are these.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, so generally so we're not using this to constrain Z. Z only should interact with messengers, right? So that's gauge mediation, right? So even gauge mediation, that's an assumption that your supersymmetry breaking only communicates through these messenger fields,
right?
Oh,
sorry, right. Z is this variant.
Yeah, uh-huh, right.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But yeah, and you do have symmetry preserving terms.
Yeah, so you have some new term, new like terms that I haven't written down, but I'll write down later. Okay, so then the question is, you look at this and you want to say, well, have I written a Slater problem? And you haven't, and that's because these have charge 0, and this is 1 and 1, and even if I can't take the Hermitian conjugate of that, so I can't actually allow this operator because of holomorphy. And that's same with all of these, and proton decay and everything. And so this type of symmetry and holomorphy and supersymmetry forbids these interactions. And so you're still safe from these problematic Slater violation and proton decay. However, I've introduced a couple new interactions.
Well, don't you also need to worry about, maybe they're too high-dimensional matter, but you do also have to worry about
higher-dimensional operators, yeah.
Right?
So you could have some loop interaction, you say, that violates. But as you'll see later, this is a minimal Slater. It turned out to be a minimal Slater violation scheme.
Okay.
And so I think that turns out that because of that, these are not problematic.
Okay.
So there are four realizations of this gauge mediation. I mean, this is just kind of classification. So traditionally, people have considered this right here, no mixing between the messenger and the Higgs, right? So that's what we're calling type one gauge mediation. And what we call type two is allowing this messenger lepton piece to mix with H up. You could have also just had this lepton piece of the bar mixed with H down, or both. But because H down doesn't really enhance the standard model like Higgs boson piece, we don't really consider this, or this, and this on top of it, these kind of have a tachyonic mass problem. This is the more complete supermodel potential. So you have this term. Actually, I still didn't write them down. There are some more terms we consider in our full supermodel. I guess I didn't write them down. They're not really that relevant. So you have these interactions for type 2 gauge mediation. I only wrote down this piece of the MSM superpotential. Because the rest doesn't really matter, this is the only piece that really contributes to the Higgs mass. And now we perform a rotation on the messenger Yukawa interactions. And so when you do this, we do this rotation. It corresponds to, so I'm rotating the messengers and the Higgses so that I end up with this superpotential right here. As you see, I still do have some messenger Higgs mixing. However, since this Z is proportional to the mass of the messenger, right, this is roughly like the messenger mass, the additional mixing is suppressed by mu prime over m. And this mu prime should be of order. Is of order of the electroweak scale, so you don't really have to worry about it. So basically, all the messengers, all the effects of the messenger of this supersymmetry breaking spurion are coming through interaction with the spurion. However, now you've introduced an additional interaction where your messenger now interacts with the MSSM fields. So then you might say, well, what about flavor? Now that I've reintroduced this interaction with the MSM fields, shouldn't I have to worry about flavor? Because I have two UCAL couplings. But you actually have a minimal flavor violation contribution because the UCAL couplings are proportional. So that means I can simultaneously diagonalize both of these UCAL couplings at the same time. And so I really have no flavor violation. And in fact, in the MSSM, for example, you actually are free to diagonalize either the up or down UCAL coupling. You have enough freedom in your field to completely diagonalize those. So if you think about it in those bases, I can even now diagonalize these and look at it and see I haven't introduced any flavor violation. So there is an additional interaction or important contribution to supersymmetry, and it is this tree-level contribution. And it's to the Higgses. And it basically comes from these interactions, and there actually should be a mass insertion of mu prime right here, but I cannot get it to show up on my diagram for some reason. I don't know why. I can in other things, just not the Beamer for some reason. So anyway, you have this interaction, and it's a tree-level contribution. It's controlled by mu prime. So mu prime is a Lechery scale, so you don't have to worry about it being significantly large because it's proportional to mu prime squared. But it could be of order, you know, electroweak scale, which is means it could be important. However, it generally is not important. The reason for that is if you integrate this out, you get this contribution right here. And in gauge mediation, F has to be less than m squared, or you have tachyonic masses for your messengers. So this if you expand this, you get this roughly this, and this term is less than 1 and squared. So generally, for most gauge mediation parameter spaces, this is quite suppressed, and you don't have to really worry about it. However, we did include this in our code, so when it is relevant for our plots, it has been considered. Okay, so now there is a one-loop contribution to the Skorupski and Slepton's. And so these are the three diagrams. So in supersymmetry, if supersymmetry is exact, this diagram plus this diagram plus these diagrams should sum to zero. And when supersymmetry is broken, softly, the fermion masses don't get any contribution, only the sleptons. So when supersymmetry is broken, this diagram stays the same size, and then these two are enhanced. This diagram is negative, and this diagram is positive. So the sign of this loop is dependent on whether this is enhanced more than this diagram or this is enhanced more than that diagram. Because the top quark, this T corresponds to the top quark, because the top quark is massless, you have an IR singularity in this when the messenger goes massless. So that IR singularity actually drags this, or makes this, enhances this diagram so it's larger than this one. And so you actually create a negative mass for your skorks from these two diagrams. Which you might be thinking, well, that's problematic, because in gauge mediation, the squark masses are at two loops, and so this would then naively be larger. However, it turns out it's actually not that difficult to suppress this contribution. So your two-loop contribution from like gauge contribution is this. And this is roughly, I'm showing the two masses of the those two third-generation squarks. And then I have, if I do an expansion on the loop contribution as in F over M, I get an additional F over M squared suppression here. So that this term is suppressed by the supersymmetry breaking scale over the messenger scale. And what I mean is this F term over M is less than 1, right? As I previously discussed. So this can easily be less than that. And actually, if you do an analysis, the positivity of the stop mass really constrains this to be less than this contribution right here. If you actually do this out, this is 0.33, about 0.33, because this is alpha 3 is about 0.1. We take yt prime equals 1, which is the worst case scenario, right? And you take this, times it by, you know, roughly 3 here. So this roughly gives you 0.33, or 0.3. So that's really not a huge constraint on that ratio. And so you can actually easily get this to be larger than that. So now we talk about how are the A terms generated. So these diagrams basically explain how these are generated. This notation can be a little confusing, so I'm gonna explain this in terms of just the Kähler potential. So really these A terms arise from corrections to the Kähler potential of this form, where QQ dagger is like your quark field, quark superfield, and ZZ bar is your, again, your spurion. And you can then expand this Kaler Potential contribution. I have a piece that's like this, where I've taken the F term of this Q and I've taken the F term of the Z. And now FQ dagger has a piece like this. So if you put this in there, I have HUQ FZ. So I basically have an A term. This basically says the same thing, right? Because I have a wave function normalization here, but then I do it via this propagator of this F field. The important thing is also is that the A terms are not suppressed by F over M squared. So if you do an expansion of this contribution, you're left over with F over M. So this means I can have large A terms while I suppress this negative contribution of the stop masses. And so that's basically what you need. You need these large A terms and not have a tachyonic stop mass in order to enhance the Higgs mass. Okay, so there's also a two-loop contribution that arises from this new additional Yukawa coupling. And basically, you can calculate those using the wave function normalization method, which basically what you do is you assume your wave function is analytically continued in superspace, basically means dependent on the spurion. And you can do an expansion in your wave function normalization. You then redefine your Q fields. Oh, that should be Q. According to this, and this gives you a two-loop mass contribution like this. And you find when you do this, the spurion masses are proportional to discontinuities in the anomalous dimension in the beta function, basically. So, but you have to be careful when you do this. So, actually, there's another paper that did a similar calculation, and we disagree with them because of this point I'm about to make right here. So, when you do your wave function normalization, you actually have to do some rotation to, you regenerate terms, and then you rotate the fields to remove those contributions. And so you can choose to rotate the messengers and the Higgs to rotate, because the important one is this mixing, this wave function normalization, which mixes H and phi. Since they have the same quantum numbers, there's a mixing there. And you can choose to rotate that away by either just rotating the Higgs, just rotating the messengers, rotating both. However, it turns out, in terms of to do a consistent analysis, the way we consistently did analysis, there is other ways to do consistent analysis, but we chose that you only rotate this messenger, the messenger field, because if you don't, you only rotate the Higgs, because if you rotate the messenger, you then actually reintroduce messenger Higgs mixing that's proportional to the messenger scale. So you reintroduce a large mixing between the messenger and Higgs scale. So if you only rotate the Higgs superfield to remove this, then everything is weak scale, and so it's a small effect. By doing this, you see that only the beta function of YT prime is affected by the mixing. So that's where we differed on from them, is that their beta functions dependent on Y and YT prime dependent on YT prime. So you do this, and you end up with these two loop contributions. And again, we only really need to consider this approximation that gives us the leading term in F over M squared, because if F over M squared is small, or is of order one, or is, like, because there's corrections to this, that'll be F squared over M squared times F to the fourth over M, or F squared over M to the fourth, et cetera, those terms will be smaller than the one loop contribution. So in the end, I don't really care about them. And the important thing, the reason this I went through this whole analysis to show you ours is different is because the difference in our final result is this. And this is very important, because if you take this term away, then this is a negative contribution. And so this negative contribution is larger than your positive contribution for much of your parameter space. And so you actually have a tachyonic slepton mass. However, because this is a top Yukawa coupling, it's fairly large, it actually turns out that it's not negative because of this top Yukawa coupling, and you have an okay model. That's the reason that considering the spottom is problematic, is because the bottom Yukawa coupling is much smaller. Now, if you take really, really large tangent beta, you could get this probably to work as well. I mean, yeah, order 50. You need your YB order 1. So it's still possible, but it's just a very small sliver of parameter space in tangent beta, and it doesn't really help your Higgs mass. So that's the reason we didn't consider it. Okay. Yeah, so Okay, so now we're going to talk about the mass spectrum. So the mass spectrum, so on this right is the squark masses, and this is for a point which I'll show you where it came from in the next plot. It's on the next page. But as you see, this we actually get a large enhancement of the third generation squarks. However, that's not true in every region of parameter space. It's in typical regions of parameter space, that's true, but there are actually regions where that isn't true, which I'll talk about in a minute. And that's due to this two-loop contribution being large for a lot of the parameter space. And two-loop contribution is proportional to YT prime, this new Yukawa coupling. And the sleptons are actually also affected. Even though their Yukawa couplings are quite small, there's a contribution from running in the S term. So in gauge mediation, the S term usually is zero because you do the sum of the trace of hypercharge, and that sums to zero because it's basically an anomaly condition, right? So it has to cancel to zero. However, because we add these new contributions to the third generation squarks, it doesn't cancel. And so you actually can have fairly large contributions to this S term, and that can significantly affect your running. And what that does is basically it decreases the mass of the left-handed sleptons and increases the mass of the right-handed sleptons, and for most regions of parameter space. And so that's what you can see here. So this dotted line corresponds to YT prime, this new Yukawa coupling, equal to zero. As you see, there's quite a large splitting. And this is just coincidental that for this point we chose here, that these masses now are degenerate. So this the red ones become smaller and the blue ones become larger. Okay, so here is the Higgs mass parameter space. And we've done a plot of YT prime, this new Yukawa coupling, and then this is F over M squared. And as you see, for 2.1 TeV Galeno, almost all the parameter space is above what we said you had to have for 2.5 TeV before. And those previous plots came from this point right here, about right here. So it wasn't even, it's somewhere right here with a 2.1 TeV Galeno. So now let's talk about the constraints, this over here and this over here. So this constraint right here comes from the slepton mass dropping below the experimental constraints, the lower bound on the mass of the sleptons, because this the left-handed sleptons are pushed down by this S term, and in fact, as the S term gets large enough, and it gets larger proportional to YT, they basically go tachyonic, but you cut it off where they drop below the experimental constraints. And actually, this top bound right here is due to the stop going tachyonic. So as this F over M squared term goes to 1, the one loop contribution is much larger than the two loop contribution, and it goes tachyonic and becomes negative. So another interesting thing is that along this range, the stop is light, right? So the stop is light, and so you actually may be able to actually decrease your tuning issues. You also, detectability may evade some of the constraints at the LHC because you have a light stop. Another thing also, if you look in Shi's paper, the constraints for a light left-handed slepton are actually weaker as well, if that's your NLSP. And actually right along this region of parameter space, you have a left-handed slepton NLSP. And so you actually can actually have less tight constraints. So yeah, so then here's a plot where we've taken a point with, this is with tangent beta equals 10. So if you go to tangent beta equals 30, it changes a little bit, but really not that significantly. And we've taken one messenger. And the reason we take one messenger is if you take more than one messenger, your squark masses get lighter relative to your Galeno because they go as n, so the squark masses go as n, and the Galeno goes as n. And so since the squark masses are masses squared, the mass is really going as the square root of n. So they actually increase less significantly. And so since the Galeno engaged mediation is generally what determines how well you can detect it, if you push up the Galeno mass relative to the stop mass, you've actually decreased the Higgs mass for a given Galeno mass. So this is, again, the maximal. And as you can see, This yellow line down here is with yt prime equals 0, and this is with yt prime equals 1. As you can see, you get a fairly significant enhancement in the mass. I mean, of order 7 or 8 GeV. And actually, this point, again, what we correspond is a yt equals 1. So we actually didn't even take our maximal point. We're kind of taking a point right here. So you actually can enhance this even more if you go into this extreme limit over here. Okay, yeah, so that's basically the model. So currently what we're working on, which I haven't quite added to this yet, but currently what we're working on is now including G minus 2 constraints, because as I pointed out right here, right, you have light sleptons in this region. And so in that region you have light sleptons, you can have a large contribution to your G minus 2 contribution to the muon. And with that, you can actually also, so we consider it a minimal gauge mediation type of thing where we had one spurion. You can actually break up your spurion a little bit and actually further enhance this Higgs boson mass. And also, that allows you to also have, you can also suppress your sleptron masses relative to your gliano mass if you do that. So you can actually, there's a little bit more region of parameter space that opens up if you do that. So that's what we're kind of considering now. So yeah, so in conclusion, the past years have rigorously tested the standard model. The Higgs boson is to be unveiled soon. Let's cross our fingers that it's this next week. The LHC has excluded a lot of mass range, though, even beyond that, 145 to 400 or 500, you know, in that range. Some prominent features are emerging. However, it seems that vanilla SUSY models tend to very light Higgs, especially like gauge mediation, for example. And gauge mediation, if this rumor of 125 Higgs boson turns out to be true, general gauge mediation is, or minimal gauge mediation is gone. And in fact, general gauge mediation is even struggling, I would say. If you want to see anything of the LHC. So if you can't see anything of the LHC, I personally don't care. Because that's going to be a long time, and I don't really want to, I would stop thinking about this myself. However, if you allow for Higgs messenger mixing, you can enhance these A terms, and then these large A terms give a much larger mass. So how much time do I have? I have another little excerpt that's very unrelated to this I can give if there's time, but if we need to go, I can quit right now. This is what I planned on giving. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so we consider it really in the context of minimal flavor violation right now. However, like I said, you change the mass spectrum a little bit. The mass spectrum isn't the typical MFE, MFE. Sorry, I was thinking minimal gauge MFE. Yeah, this is MFE scenario because once you rotate the Higgs into the MSSM components, it's proportional to the Yukawa coupling, and so it tends that all your flavor violation is proportional to the Yukawa coupling, which is MFE.
So it's actually one of the few models where you have a theory predicting MFE, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. Instead of some generic group where you break, yeah.
Exactly.
But I mean, in some ways, it's MFE in the context that it's proportional to the Yukawa, but MFE really theorizes that there are these flavor groups, right? You break it by some spurion, and Yukawa couplings are this spurion of this breaking. So it's technically not exact. I mean, it's MFE in the sense that it's all flavor violations proportional to Yukawa couplings, right? If that's what you're defining MFE, then yes.
Sorry, actually, let me go back to that, because, I mean, there was this issue that we mentioned quickly, we skipped past it, of whether there's tailored potential terms that could have more general flavor structure.
But again, it should be proportional to Yukawa coupling, right? So you should have...
Why does it have to be? I mean, if I just write down, so maybe it is because of some additional assumptions. Theory,
okay,
right?
So why don't we think?
If I say there's some dynamics that gives phi of m, and there's some dynamics that generates at some scale m.
Ah, so you're saying there's
that generates
some...
these higher dimension operators that you like the one you wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the one you wrote down was a phi plus squared Z5R H up, where you, this G prime must become a 5 plus square over M squared. Right, so there's some dynamics of mass scale M that's generating that superpotential operator.
Right.
Why do I not have to worry about also what Taylor potential operators that same dynamics might generate?
Well, I'm only allowing to mix with the Higgs, right? That's the point.
Well,
if I,
how are you requiring that? Like, what symmetry is guaranteeing that?
The U1, right? Because it has, the only negative charge on the U1 are these Higgses.
Right, but if I imagine that it's also generating some Taylor potential stuff, those don't have to be held, those aren't.
Yeah, you're right, so they're saying those.
Right, and the Taylor potential, shouldn't there be some 5 plus star?
There should be some 5 plus star, but.
And so you can just take that operators.
So.
Isn't it generally that you can shift from the Kähler potential to the superpotential by a Kähler wire transformation? At least in supergravity it works that way. I mean, you have some freedom where you put this.
But I think you have to worry about gauge symmetries here too, right? So I have to have.
Right. So all I want to do is like take your bad operator, the one that you don't want to, the reason that people usually impose.
Yeah, right.
You're the Messenger parity, right? So the five, ten, and then just add some 5+ daggers to that, right? That looks like.
So you're saying you have some mixing term in your Kähler potential.
Maybe I'm missing some really zero sort of reason why that just cannot appear in your Kähler potential, but I would naively say that it should, and then you get a mass suppressed.
It should be a fairly high order. You're saying it's a higher order correction to the Kähler potential.
It's a higher order, but then since you're assuming G star is of order M anyway, I think it's really only suppressed by 1 power of M.
Why do you say that? You just want to attach a phi star there from the Kähler potential.
And I probably want to look at the guy that has a 5 bar star QU bar set rather than the phi. Because I think it's harder to rotate that one. I'm not sure you can rotate away.
The which one?
But like 5+*^5^*, Q left, U bar right, for example.
That's the one you want.
Right. So that gives me some 1/m. Maybe I can rotate it all away. That's completely.
That's what I think about. Because I mean, so. You're worried about the higher order dynamics somehow generating something.
Yeah, if that higher order dynamics generates those, there's no primary reason they should be.
Right, that's true. So we were mostly just considering this as an effective theory that generated these terms. But you're right, you might have to constrain your higher level model.
Yeah, if it's an effective theory, you should write down every term that you can write down in the effective theory.
So what I mean by an effective theory, we're assuming that some dynamics generate this theory by symmetry. Now you're right. We should have to think about how to constrain that operator. I think you're right. Because I think you're right. You should through some higher if whatever the dynamics that would generate this. You're right. I think should actually generate.
Yeah. I mean, it may still be that there's enough freedom, as just was saying, in field redefinitions to completely
through the wild,
generate
those
terms. But
are there any other questions? This may be a good time to stop.